From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of January 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. TGM's Matt Bennett from Windsor, Illinois will be here to look at the cash grain market, and we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Pete Levin. Along the way, I'll give you a number several times to dial in for our all-day agriculture Cultural Outlook. Get your tickets now. The phone number is 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. Our all-day ag outlook is Tuesday, March the 5th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets are $25.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago. On this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day lower than nearby contract in the March, a hard or rather soft red winter wheat. A settlement price down 6 1/4 at $7.68 1/2. May at $7.77, down 6 3/4. And July soft red in Chicago at $7.82 1/4. Settlement price there down 6 1/2 cents. The hard red in Kansas City at $8.48 1/2, settled 2 cents, rather 1/4 cent lower for the day. And the corn futures, March contract, 7.23 1/4, up 2 1/2 cents. The May futures at 7.25 1/4. These are closes, up 2 1/2. And July on the close at 7.13 1/2, down 3 1/2. December futures at 5.86 3/4, down 3 1/2. And the March at 5.96, down 4 1/4. Oddly enough, the nearby March contract did just change, and for a close, it is now 4 3/4 higher on its close at 7.25 1/2. That is not a settlement price. March bean futures at 14.35 1/4, settlement price down 1 3/4. The May at 14.23 3/4, settlement price down 3. July at 14.17 1/2, down 2 1/4. And the August at 13.92 1/2, down 2. November beans at $13.05 3/4 a bushel, a settlement price there 1 1/4 higher on the afternoon. Bean meal futures at 4.14.70, down 1.80, and the bean oil up 8 cents at 52.11. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April at 130.35, a dime lower. The June up 17 1/2 at 126.80. March feeders at 147.95, were 80 cents higher. April at 151.17 1/2, up 1.17 1/2, and April lean hogs at 89.67 1/2, up $1.67 1/2. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby March crude oil at $95.93 a barrel, up 70 cents. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price at $2.86 6/10. That's 3 2/10 of a cent higher. Ethanol at 2.38 2/10 is just about 8 1/10 of a cent lower, rather higher for the day. And the difference between the two at 48 1/2 cents is 2 4/10 cents wider than it was yesterday. Natural gas at 3.46 1/10 of a cent. That's down 9 3/10. The heating oil at $3.08 1/2. Up 7, and gold futures at $1,669.90, down $16.80. The U.S. dollar, 79.93. That's up 0.008 for the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Partly sunny skies, a high of just 20 degrees. An east wind at 8 miles an hour. Tonight, snow, likely after midnight, mostly cloudy, a low of 16. The wind chill values between 4 and 10 degrees this evening. Southeast winds at 8 to 10. Chance of precipitation is 60% in the area. New snow accumulation of less than 1 inch is possible. On Friday, a 50% chance of snow before noon. Cloudy, gradually becoming mostly sunny. A high of 32 degrees. 72 may be where our friend from New Orleans is today. But here it's 32 degrees. Southwest winds at 8 to 18 miles an hour. And then on Friday evening, partly cloudy and a low of 11. Wind chill values of 0 and 5. Northwest winds at 13 to 17 will gust all the way to 20 miles an hour tomorrow, or rather on Friday night. We'll have a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Auditory Care Center, an independent hearing care center serving Champaign, Piatt, Ford, Vermilion, and other East Central Illinois counties. Auditory Care Center offers hearing evaluations as well as selection, fitting, and repair of hearing aids at 892-5959 in Rantoul.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon, the 24th day of January, 2013. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. If you have not purchased yet tickets for All-Day Ag Outlook, about half of them are gone now. You can give us a call at 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. The All-Day Ag Outlook is Tuesday, March the 5th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Tickets are $25 each. And one of the people you'll be able to see there is Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises. He's in Mandeville, Louisiana, where I'm told, Dan, that it's much warmer than it is in central Illinois today.
Yeah, we're in our 70s here today, so it's convertible weather down here. So
short
sleeves. We're getting ready for a party. We're getting ready for the party. Everybody brings in king cakes in the morning, and we got the Super Bowl and then the Mardi Gras, so this is going to be Party City here for the next 10 to 15 days.
Let's see, this will be your first time in the area for this. Are you looking forward to it? I bet you are.
I am looking forward to it. The locals tell me it's something that you really gotta watch it. It's something. They really get serious about these parades. There's a parade every day for about 2 weeks straight. So, and then they throw all kinds of stuffed toys and beads and just about everything comes off of those. So it'll be interesting to watch this, I guess.
All right. Well, you have fun, and then I'd have you report back to us, but you probably better not do that on the air.
Well, I'm going to miss some of it because I'm going to be up in Illinois the first week of February, actually, with you.
Yes, you will
be. At a couple spots.
Yeah.
At the pork producers and up at the Castle Bank, I guess, in DeKalb.
Yeah, so. It'll be in DeKalb, but Sycamore, actually, at the Center for Agriculture. I think that's, what, February the 4th, and over at the Expo in Peoria for the Pork Expo on Wednesday, February the 5th, and I think those are the right days, but it's Tuesday and Wednesday, whichever the dates they happen
to be. Well, I hope
I
don't have to bring my full-length wool coat up there.
Yeah, you will. Yeah. Actually, you're going to freeze your tuchus off after being in those sunny, warm climes, I bet.
I probably will be.
Hey, tell me about this marketplace. Things have been pretty rocky this week.
Well, especially today, of course, we've had a period of strength here, especially in soybeans, due to the warm and dry weather pattern that has been kind of blanketing Argentina for the past 2 or 3 weeks. And then the weather models here starting yesterday afternoon started turning. One of them started turning a little more normal, kind of calling for a little more normal-type rain activity over the 10 days. So that kind of started yesterday's sell-off in soybeans, and then that continued in the overnight and through the session here until the last half hour trade. Beans were able to pretty much erase all their losses and close here fractionally lower. Corn actually came back and closed a couple penny higher in March corn. So technically, probably what a chartist would call is today's break in the market was one of these what we call a spike low, and being able to come back to near unchanged after being sharply lower, it probably tees up the market for a higher overnight trade and maybe a strong finish on Friday.
When you look at the nearby March, kind of a head and shoulders, there is a head and shoulders top there. And I don't think today's high broke any really resistance.
You talking about corn, beans, or what do you want?
Oh, I'm sorry, soybeans, March contract.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could probably read a head and shoulders in there. But if you look at March on a weekly basis, this decline that we had here in January, down around the 1351, and then when you compare it to a 14 period stochastic, we have what we call as a bullish divergence in that.
Okay.
And that would indicate that you have a decent shot at popping out the middle December high point of 1501. So from a chartist point of view, This right shoulder may have a little difficulty getting solidified. We may go higher first before this right shoulder kind of comes into play. So I'm actually a little friendly and think that beans will probably pop above that $15 mark yet if sometime here over the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, so that 1501 was made back in the week of December, the 17th or thereabouts?
Yeah, week of December 17th,
okay,
right.
So you think that there's a potential we could go up and tag that, and if we can make it through, what's the top side?
I think we'll go through it, and then we'll kind of go from there. If we would begin to kind of clear the $15 area with some good solid closes, then you just basically add another 50 cents, start looking at 1550, and then we'll kind of go from there. But I think in order for that to be realized, we're probably going to have the weather pattern be kind of more warm and dry and get some downward adjustments in the Argentina soybean crop. Then that would maybe give you some fundamental ammunition to kind of do that. But we'll have to kind of wait and see whether or not that happens. If these weather maps all turn warm and dry here tomorrow or early next week, I don't think we're going to go sharply higher here tomorrow, but you never know. But it does. We are ripe here for the market to kind of turn up here and finish off January, and it looks like we're going to close out the month higher, have some monthly reversals to the upside, and that kind of tees up, I think, a February rally like I talked about last week.
Then if you look at the November charts, does that chart appeared to me to look better than the March contract, so you can tell me.
Well, November's still in good shape, I think, to try to go up into the 1350 area. Now, maybe to go beyond that, we're going to have some new fundamental news of some kind. But I kind of view it as a double bottom, and we're going to go back and try to check out the November high point or that December high that we had around that first week or first 10 days of December, which is 1340. So I'm still at least optimistic that maybe November beans can go back up into that 1340, 1350. So, you know, if people are kind of looking at spots to move inventory or get started on new crop pricing, those would be some of the areas that I'd at least, you know, try to be patient to see if we could get up into that area.
For the corn?
Corn, trying to get December corn to rally is going to be about like pulling hen's teeth. But we have made some progress off of that January low. But we've got to kind of clear this 580, this 592 area. We start clearing that, and I think there's a shot yet that I would not rule out that these corn can try to climb its way up into the 610, 615-ish area, give or take a nickel. So I would at least be patient to see if we could maybe get corn up into those areas before I would panic anyway. And I think most farmers are probably going to kind of wait out this insurance period and see what kind of average we end up with the month of February. And like I said, if my cyclical work is dialed in, we may end up with a 6-plus type average for February. And now I think that would be all bearish longer term.
Absolutely.
Because that would solidify a lot of this 99 million acre projections. And if we would have some nice rains in June, July, we could be much lower by fall anyway.
Yeah, so we've watched that happen before, and we ended up with a drought in 2012. But droughts don't come very often. The last big one was in 88. So if that were to happen, and we were at crop insurance in that 590 to 610 range, someplace in that, would you be satisfied with a producer who simply said, I'm going to use the crop insurance as my hedge and not worry about the rest of it?
Well, crop insurance is not a substitute for marketing. I think it's a backup plan. It's definitely a good backup plan, but it's not a substitute. You still, you need to use the fall option. By the fall option, and then that basically protects you then from being an aggressive early seller. At least it cushions the sting if you would happen to end up with a short crop and higher prices. So the fall options, I think, is part of your marketing plan. I think the spring option here is basically is a backup plan. If you just can't pull the trigger for one reason or the other, at least it's a backup plan, but you still have your crop to market. And so it's not a substitute, but I think, you know, I'm inclined to put some stuff on the books early this year. And what I mean by early, I guess sometime by mid-March. And then we just kind of take one week at a time. I look at some of my longer-term cycles, and it kind of thinks that you were open or were vulnerable for a three-and-a-half-year cycle low going down into the summer months. So that's a little scary. So that's kind of why I'm inclined to kind of take advantage of this winter strength, if we can get one going through the month of Feb, to kind of lay off some price risk.
Pitfalls are what? The world economy?
Pardon?
The pitfalls to all of this? What are the biggest problems?
Well, I suppose dry weather. I think the economy. I just got done reading an article here that the Argentine farmers now are back holding inventory off the market because of inflation, as a hedge against inflation. Of course, I hope our economy doesn't get as bad as Argentina, but it wouldn't surprise me the way we're going. But that'll make our ag programs more interesting, won't it?
Yeah, I guess it would.
Yeah, American farmers start holding grain off the market to as a hedge against inflation, then we know we're in deep voodoo.
Yes, indeed. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time, and glad you'll be up with us in the month of February at Castle Bank and over at the Pork Expo.
Well, I'm looking forward to coming up north. I hope it's mild that week.
Yeah, don't bet on it.
Okay, Todd.
Hey, have fun. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
That is Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Again, he'll be with us for a couple of our ag panels. You can find those on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There are several of them between now and our all-day Ag Outlook. That's the big one over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If you want tickets to it, they cost $25 a piece. It's a day-long event. All of our agricultural analysts that you hear on the air will be there, along with Murray Wise and John Bondurant, and then Peter Goldsmith from here on campus, the all-day Ag Outlook. Tickets are on sale now at 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. We're looking so forward to that event and having Dan up here during the month of February.
Support comes from the Black Dog Smoke and Ale House, serving barbecue, beef brisket, pork shoulder, ribs, chicken, and more. Slow cooked over a wood-fired smoker. The Black Dog, 201 North Broadway in downtown Urbana. Open Sunday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Friday and Saturday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. And from Common Ground Food Co-op, now at Lincoln Square Mall, featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. Learn more on their website at www.commonground.coop.
Hi, this is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. When you think of mustard, is it that yellow kind typically squirted by millions on hot dogs? Lisa Brotz discovered a world of mustard beyond the yellow in her latest edition of In My Backyard.
Mustard is just the right condiment for late winter. The yellow stuff you squirt on a hot dog at the ball game, which, don't get me wrong, is enjoyable in its own right, that's not the mustard I'm talking about. I'm talking about mustard that's deeply flavored, sharp and spicy and puckery and very warming in the damp chill. Plus, this kind of mustard is as versatile as it is powerful. It tastes good on meat if you eat it, but also on vegetables like broccoli and cabbage, because mustard is from the brassicas family, just like those plants. There are endless varieties of mustard you can make, and mustard is super easy to put together. It lends itself well to small batches, and it lasts forever in the fridge. You can make really good mustard for your burgers, or your broccoli, with mustard seeds, some mustard powder, some vinegar, a few spices, maybe some beer, and a mortar and pestle. But you can also make it in quantity using a food processor, which is good because I've been invited to a Facebook-organized gathering where every guest has been asked to choose a mustard recipe and to make enough of that mustard recipe to fill 10 small jars for swapping with the others. Food swapping isn't anything new. It's a bit of a twist on the potluck concept, except that instead of each person bringing a dish to share for a meal, each person brings enough of something for everyone in attendance to take home. So I'm going to come home from this thing with 10 different jars of mustard. But first, I have to make my chosen mustard, a spicy mustard whose flavor will hopefully be deepened by some stout beer. A lot of the work has been done over the previous 2 days, while the mustard seeds steeped in a vinegary, beery sort of soup. Then into the food processor it goes. The results are a little alarming at first.
This is some killer mustard. I'm not even sure what this is supposed to look like or smell like or taste like or anything. It's kind of soupier than what I'm used to for a mustard.
One really cool thing about homemade mustard is that you can can it if you want to, but it's not totally necessary unless you don't plan on eating it for a long time. If anything, it actually tastes better as it ages and the flavors work better together. But whether you're canning or not, you need to put it in containers. There are a lot of containers that'll work, but the best and the ones that will most beautifully showcase your incredible looking homemade mustard are small canning jars with lids and rings. These jars look amazing. Photos are taken, I admit it. Armed with my jars to be distributed, some sausages to serve as a vehicle for mustard sampling, and a couple of beers to wash it all down, I head around the corner to my friend Jacqueline's house to meet up with the other mustard swappers. Our hostess has made lemon and roasted garlic mustard. Sandra's is a chipotle and blackberry mustard. Katrina arrives with a cranberry mustard. Jesse brings a spicy beer mustard, not to be confused with my spicy stout mustard. And Mel offers up a cognac mustard. Beth's is made with white wine and tarragon, Karen's is a basic brown mustard, and Laura's got a Sri Lankan mustard. It's like a rainbow of mustards. The visual of about 100 stack containers of mustard, all different shades of yellow and brown and one almost magenta, is quite arresting. But we get over it pretty fast as the sausages, vegetarian and not so vegetarian, begin arriving from the grill outside and we get down to the dirty work of trying out all the mustards. It's intense and tasty. Food swaps are incredibly social activities, especially in winter when we might not see as much of our friends and neighbors as we'd like. They're a great way for us to keep our kitchen skills sharp and to help each other fill our pantries or fridges with something homemade. Plans are afoot for another swap. Sounds like 10 kinds of barbecue sauce might be sitting next to 10 kinds of mustard come grilling season. For In My Backyard, this is Lisa Braltz.
Yeah, thanks to Lisa Braltz for her In My Backyard segments. They are put together by our own Director of Agricultural Programming right here at the radio station, David Dickey.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Are you listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media? Yep. And just to let you know that I pushed back our agricultural cash grain segment with Matt Bennett just a couple of minutes to 2:32. That in large part because we got a quick note from Pete Levitt that he will not be available to do the weather segment for this afternoon. So I took some extra time with Dan Zwicker. A couple of other ideas. This intervening time, you could give us a call at 217-333-7300 and order your tickets for the all-day Ag Outlook. You could take a look at our website at willag.org and see what the calendar of events looks like. We have a few Ag panels out and about, including two that Dan will be on. The Pork Expo is a really good one. That comes up on the 5th day of February. It's a Wednesday in Peoria, Illinois, and we'll not only have Dan Zwicker there, but Sue Martin will be in and Mr. Nelson from Rabobank. That should be a really great program. It does cost $10 to get into the expo. It's a day-long event, so you can come over and take a look at that in Peoria, Illinois. But again, you'll get to see Sue Martin and Dan Zwicker, and myself will be there for an Ag Outlook panel on Wednesday afternoon. In a couple minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk with Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, right here on the Closing Market Report.
It's National Rhubarb Pie Day. It's also St. Bernard of Vianney Day, patron of farm workers and field hands. On this day in agricultural history in 1855, the first bridge over the Mississippi River opened in what is now Minneapolis, Minnesota. In 1862, 1,400 varieties of grapevines were brought from Europe and planted in California in the Sonoma Valley. Years later, after blight destroyed much of Europe's vineyards, some of these same vines, now on resistant American rootstock, helped save the European wine industries. In 1932, the El Salvador Army killed 4,000 protesting farmers. The farmers were protesting layoffs and wage cutbacks in El Salvador's western coffee region during a depression. In 1961, Wilhelm Koppersteid, a Roman Catholic priest and cultural anthropologist, he developed theories on the origins of society based on studies of food-gathering tribes. And in 1998, Pope John Paul II condemned a U.S. embargo against Cuba. The embargo, begun in 1962, was enacted after the Castro government confiscated private property of U.S. citizens and the United Fruit Company. And that's this day in agricultural history.
This Stock and Commodity Report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
It's the 24th day of January. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Matt Bennett from TGM. He hails from Windsor, Illinois, of course, but today he's in the Windy City, Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for taking the time out of your visit.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, why are you in Chicago today?
Well, I'm talking to a leadership group with a Pioneer Seed Company. Just kind of give them a little rundown of the market. They came up to see what the Board of Trade is all about, and want to get a little bit of a report as well to go along with it.
What's your main points to them today?
Oh, well, basically just figure out how to manage their risk whenever, because these guys are getting together trying to figure out how to optimize their field performance, and may as well be optimizing how much they get per bushel, too.
Absolutely. Tell me about the cash marketplace at this time.
Well, we're definitely in a tight situation, both corn and beans, and base is still really good for us locally, and we're in a pretty good situation with, where we're at as far as shipping things out. We don't have a whole lot coming in. Beans are moving pretty good, and corn's really not doing a whole lot of anything.
So does most of the corn that you have, is it on hand in the elevator already? Are you able to source anything from the countryside?
There's really nothing out there.
That's what I thought.
No, there's just really nothing out there.
And then are you still shipping train loads to odd places as you have been in the past?
Yeah, we're going all over the place, really. And as far as the corn goes, we haven't shipped a ton of corn out just because, there's depends on what level they're willing to take on the aflatoxin, because we've got a little bit here and there, depending on which facility you're in.
Right, so you're still looking, sourcing probably most of the livestock segment then, I would think.
Yes, definitely.
All right, and then when you look forward into the new crop era, and of course February is crop insurance setting month, producers should be thinking about marketing in what forms?
Well, I think whenever you look at the corn market right now, you definitely have some profitability there. And the person has to keep in mind that, if we end up with 100 million acres and any crop at all, it's really going to be devastating to prices. So there's still profitability now. I'd be marketing some, at least covering your input costs.
Do you think you'll have time between the crop insurance finishing up in February and the 15th sign-up, and then, of course, the end of the month when USDA brings out its first official estimate of acreage in the United States? Will you have time at that point, and will prices be high enough to go ahead and try to make a marketing plan in that 15-day intermeeting time?
Well, that's a tough call. My personal opinion is that we may have some weakness here in the next, between now and maybe the middle of planting. I just think that the sheer size of acreage is going to weigh heavily on the market in some people's minds. It may not be straight down, but I certainly think we could see some downside.
So you think the market will be anticipating it much sooner than USDA will release the number?
That would be my guess, yes. And so I'm not saying to go out there and sell everything by any means or even a huge percentage, but I'd like to get enough on the books that a person feels good about, you know, the levels that they lock their inputs in.
Hey, you have a good day in Chicago there with the folks from Pioneer.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM out of Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. You can always listen to all of our agricultural programming there. Or you can just dial this number, 217-333-3434. We call that one our mobile analyst portal. And we post the opening or closing numbers and a bit of analysis. I'm Todd Gleason.